Good morning, and thanks so much for tuning in to your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak, and as we have been announcing, we are having another call-in show this morning with regards to gardening and sort of the good and bad critters that may be visiting your garden and what to do to encourage the good ones to stay and the bad ones to leave. Would that be the best way to say it?
That sounds pretty what it is.
All right. And Lise Skidmore joining us this morning. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
And do you want to start off with some of the good or some of the bad?
Well, you know, actually, I didn't remember that part of the conversation, encouraging the good to stay. I just concentrated on keeping the bad ones out or keeping them under control. And then I've had lots of questions this week about blossom end rot on tomato, squash, and peppers. And also, how do you propagate succulents?
Okay. So when you say people run into you and say, hey, Lee, I have these questions.
Yeah. You know, or I get text or phone messages. How can I do this? You know, I knocked a branch off my jade. What do I do? That kind of stuff.
Okay.
So leave me a message. I'll call you back.
All right. So we'll start off, I guess, with some of the troublesome creatures in our gardens.
Right. And let's talk about, this is what I focused on, deer, bear, dogs, cats, and squirrels and slugs.
Okay.
So most people, when they have a severe deer and bear problem, have put up a fence, whether it be chain link, chicken wire, electric, or using pallets to make a fence. It has to be strong and it has to be sturdy or they'll just walk right through. Fish nets shouldn't be used because animals get tangled up in there, and I can't imagine trying to free a thrashing deer from a fish net, you know, so let's just not do that one.
And are there certain things that they're attracted to, certain plants or...
An analogy would be when you find a restaurant that you like to go to, you keep going back because you know you're always going to get that. I think animals are the same way. If you have delicious cabbage or lettuce or daffodils, they're going to come back and eat them. So, and it's easier to stop it before it starts than it is to stop it once they get in the habit of eating in your delicatessen.
Okay, so for those larger animals, it's pretty much a fence, it sounds like.
It's pretty much a fence, yeah. And it, like I said, it needs to be strong and sturdy or they just walk right through. A 400-pound black bear coming down to eat is, you know, could be unstoppable, and it would be very scary. One of the new things that I've heard about that people are using is predator urine. Am I allowed to say that?
Sure.
You can buy online urine to keep animals out because it's a natural instinct. When they smell that, they know a predator's present, and then they flee. And you can buy wolf, a bear, a coyote, you know, anything that you want. It can be expensive, and you have to reapply it after heavy rains. And bear smells awful. So if you're going to use that, you need to prepare your neighbors or prepare yourself that, ooh, this is going to happen.
Have you ever tried that or you just
I
have
just
heard
have
of it?
I've heard people, especially people who have cabins out, are using that to keep the predators away. So because they can't really plant because they know something's going to come in and have lunch.
Now, if you had bear, would that attract a bear, though? It would keep away the deer or and certain things, I would think.
Yeah, you would use that to keep away deer and dogs and cats. But I read what it said online, and it doesn't say that bear urine attracts other bears. I would think if it was female, there might be a problem. But if it's male, it would be like, this is my territory, stay out.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting, but... Anyway, here's a cute story. I was talking with a friend about how she keeps deer out of her yard, and she said, well, let me tell you a story. She was outside, and the deer were in her neighbor's yard, and the neighbor let this little tiny dog out, and a little dog came out and went, yip, yip, and the deer fled. So she said, next time the deer are out, she's going to get down on all fours and bark and see if that works. So anyway...
Or you might have a little recording. I don't know.
That might work, too. And it may need to be the combination of the jumping around and the barking. But I thought that was a cute story. To keep deer and bear out. People are piling pallets, you know, stacking them at odd angles around wherever you want to keep them out, because they won't walk on it because they can't see how it works, and I don't understand the function of the animal's eyes, but they say that it works.
Can't get footing on it or something.
Kind
of might be unattractive though, but. Well, I guess you could create something.
You probably could. You could paint it red, white, and blue or lavender or whatever so that you've got decoration along with it. But people are having to go to extraordinary lengths to keep critters out. We've made it too nice of a place to come and eat. And they come early in the morning before we're outside or come when they know we're not there. So they're, you know, we're dealing with smart animals. Chicken wire is effective as a fence, putting it around something, or putting it down because cats don't like walking on it. I guess it kind of jumps around and they don't like that. I got a sonic, you know, the real high shrill sound, motion sensitive, battery powered, okay out in the rain, high shrill sound that dogs can hear but we can't. And I can watch them walk down the driveway where they've been coming and messing in my yard, and they'll get to the point where the sonic sound begins, the motion sensor detects them, and they will make a right turn or a U-turn and leave. It supposedly doesn't hurt them, and I can't hear it. I can hear the clicking sound, but I don't hear the shrill sound, and so that's another effective way to do it. It costs about $15. It's supposed to last 18 months. I bought it on Amazon. You can find all this information online. You can find it in gardening books. You can check books out from the library. The thrift store is full of useful information. You know, you go in and you go to the garden section of the books, and there's everything you could imagine.
So this, it sounds like it's very a specific distance in which this sound then goes off. So if they don't approach your house.
That's right. And once they hear it a couple of times, they're supposed to not come back. It can be set between 30 and 50 feet. So I have it set for 30 feet, but my driveway is like 90 feet long. I didn't want to have the dogs come out of the neighbor's house and get slammed with that sound. They don't act like it hurts. They don't jump and run. They just turn around and walk away.
Just alarms them, it sounds like. Yeah.
It sounds like it might make their eardrums vibrate, which would be uncomfortable. But like I said, I can't hear it, and I've got excellent hearing. Talking about bears again, if you put food in the compost, if you put vegetables, that may attract the deer because they would smell it. But if you put fish or shrimp or any of that kind of stuff, you may attract bears. You can, I know of a lady who has planted for years and years and years, dug a hole and put it in, but she didn't dig a very deep hole. And the neighbor's dogs and bears started coming in and digging up her yard after those remains. So my suggestion would be if you have, when you've shot a deer and brought it home and cleaned it, that you put the leftover parts in a heavy-duty Ziploc bag, put it in a freezer, and then on garbage day, take it out that morning because it won't have a chance to thaw. And so the bears, animals won't smell it, and so they won't come after it. And then the garbage men take it away, and everything is clean and neat again.
So you're saying people are burying the parts in their yard,
fertilizer.
Oh, okay.
But it's not being buried deep enough. I was told 2 feet, needs to be at least 2 feet, excuse me, so the smell can't get out, which for many places that's impossible.
Right, that we just don't have deep soil.
We don't have deep soil, and I don't know. Like, everybody has a different way that they've managed to keep some critters out of the yard, but not everything. And to have a discussion of 6 or 8 people talking about the same thing, it's amazing the variety of ideas that people have come up with. So, scarecrows, hanging the CDs online and letting them flip around, bells, planting lavender, hanging safe Irish Spring soap, drill a hole in it, hang it by the apple tree or the cherry tree because the animals don't like that mint smell. I mean, amazing things they've dreamt up or heard about. And
everyone tries a little
something. Everyone tries, yeah. And let me say thank you to those people who responded to my questions, because I have lots of ideas. So,
and should point out, this is a call-in show. If you have some suggestions or have some questions, you can give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
Yes, please call. I would appreciate being able to add new ideas so that when I am talking to somebody or somebody asks, I can say, well, these are the things that others find effective, and then I can give them the list.
I find it interesting you mentioned old CDs, and I could see that if they're rotating in the wind and flashing, mm-hmm. They're reflective on the one side, that it could alarm an animal.
And I would think that... wind chimes, because they clang and bang, or maybe just hang silverware or something that's going to make a lot of noise. I can see deer, especially as smart as they are, getting used to it being in that one place, so I would move it around just to make sure that they're always caught off guard or always surprised by what's going on. Hummingbird feeders attract bears. They smell the sugar, and they'll come right in and knock them down and drink the liquid. So you want to make sure that you keep hummingbird feeders away from your front door, away from play areas, or where away from places where you have to go in and out and back and forth. So move it 20, 30 feet away so that you can see the birds, but the other animals aren't going to be attracted to it.
And I've been told you should take them down. I mean, well, I guess it's advised, you know, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game advises to not have feeders out at this time of year because of bears.
Bears. The rufous hummingbirds are here like April, May, and June, or March, April, and May. And then they travel on north. And then the little Anna hummingbirds, they are here now, and they, I think, stay through the winter.
There are some that do, yeah. They've been spotted, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say a family, but I have birds that were there through the years, have been there all winter long. I don't know where they would stay to stay warm, you know, on those nights that get so cold. But they're there in the morning ready to get their juice. But if it's going to be below freezing, you need to bring it inside so it doesn't freeze, and then take it back out in the morning so they can eat, and then bring it in at night and it gets to be one more chore.
And I imagine also lots of interesting hanging plants that could attract hummingbirds as well.
Yes, yes. Any plant that's got a trumpet shape would attract a hummingbird. So, anyway, that's enough on hummingbirds. You know, you can always buy chemicals to keep things out of your yard. If you choose to do that, first of all, read the directions and see if it's something that's appropriate for your area. Follow those directions completely. If it says wear gloves and goggles and a respirator, do that. And then when it comes time to get rid of the container, you know, take it up to the landfill or dispose of it properly. Just don't throw it in the landfill. And, you know, if you have to go that route, you have to go that route. But I hope you would try some natural products before you try, you know, before you resort to extra strong chemicals. And as far as dogs and cats, you can teach your dog to stay in your own yard, to go in this particular place. It's time consuming and you have to stay on top of it, but it is possible. And there are leash laws. Dogs aren't supposed to be roaming. So be a good neighbor, keep your dog on a leash or train it to stay in its own yard so that your neighbors aren't upset with you. If you're out at night, carry a flashlight, carry a noisemaker, because you don't want to walk up and surprise an animal. Because if you shock him or scare him, he's going to scare you, and then everybody's going to panic. So, anyway, we're going through my notes rapidly. As far as cats, if it's a litter box trained for inside, I know people who have an outdoor litter box that doesn't get wet, stays under the deck, stays inside one of those igloo things for dogs. Or people put out the little kiddie pools full of sand and train the cat to go in there so it doesn't go in your neighbor's yard. I was told that if a cat or dog, and I would assume it would be for bears, because they're carnivores and they eat decaying, rotting meat, they could have acquired a disease that then when they poop would go into your soil. And so then the soil's contaminated and you can't plant edibles in there. Which sounds logical, but does it seem right? I just think, now what? Squirrels, they hang around the feeders, the seed feeders. People, you can go online and see how to make a seed feeder that has a big bowl up on top that the squirrel can't crawl around, or it has something hanging underneath the seed feeder that the squirrels can't get around. It has to be big enough that they can't, hang on by one toe at the top and catch the rim at the bottom and swing underneath it. They're also battery-powered ones with springs. So when the squirrel jumps on it, this little mechanism will kick out and it will fling him off the feeder, which they were for sale here in town. And I know people who have those. And I guess it's the little squirrel just gets flung. He doesn't get hurt. But they don't seem to learn not to come back. So you just keep...
They're persistent.
They
definitely are, and they're very clever.
Yes.
And I have seen them get into many a bird feeder. Is that what they're mostly after, is bird seed and bird feed?
Seed, right, more than anything. But I would assume that if they're hungry, they're going to eat whatever looks like food to them. Or if they see something else, eat it. Like if they see birds eating from a suet, that then they would try and eat it.
What about plants in your garden? Do they go for anything in particular or not really?
I don't know that they go into the garden and eat. I know they hang around the trees and they jump in and out of the trees. And we have one trained to pick up peanuts off the deck. And so he will sit out there and wait for his peanuts. So I don't know. I am continually amazed at how smart animals are.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that they can do to trick us into keeping them fed all the time. They seem to be somewhat territorial. They're always in the same tree, always on the same branch. It seems to me that it's the same squirrel because he has a bent tail that comes out to get the seeds, and I never see another one. And he just breaks the peanuts open and...
And so you're feeding him.
I'm feeding him. But he doesn't seem to bother seed feeders. So
maybe as you're giving him something, maybe.
Yeah, he doesn't have to work for it. Now let's talk about slugs.
Good old slugs, which we all have to deal with, I think.
Yeah, I know one lady who kills all of them except the yellow ones because they're native. I don't know that I've ever seen a yellow slug in town, but...
Very rarely. There aren't as many as there used to be.
Because the others are taking over?
I heard several reasons. The others are kind of taking over, but also because the yellow ones are easier for other predators to see.
Oh, okay.
Whereas the brown ones kind of blend into the
right.
undergrowth or whatever.
Okay.
And so the yellow ones, because they're easier to see, whoever eats them, I don't even know what eats them. Birds? Certain animals
eat them.
I would
think birds. I know turkeys and chickens and ducks do.
Yeah.
And I know people who raise those. You might want to borrow the neighbor's duck for a while to have them de-slug your vegetables. And I don't think that the ducks eat big plants, but I do know they eat little seedlings as they come up, and so do chickens. So,
And I also saw on social media someone had posted pictures of some kind of beetle, a fairly large beetle that was in their pot or flower pots or something. They were asking, are these good or bad? And someone said they ate slugs. Are you familiar with these?
I don't know of a beetle that eats slugs, but
okay.
We are worldwide. We exchange everything worldwide, and we could easily have brought in slug eating beetles. I think it would have to be a pretty good size.
Yeah, well, they were
to
big.
Do that. that's good for us to get rid of the slugs, but then what do we do about the beetles?
Yeah, what have you introduced?
Yeah, that we wouldn't want. But I know you find all kinds of stuff coming in as people move from other places. We have black widows here. People find those. They find the brown recluse. Kids bring tarantulas and they get away. You know, I mean, this is a world society. And so who knows what we're bringing in? Okay, I know people who take their coffee out every morning, a bag of ammonia, a gloved hand, and they go out in their sweater and pajama pants and collect slugs in the morning because that's when they're easiest to see. They're nocturnal, and they collect the biggest, you know, collect what they can see. They also put down boards and cardboard because it'll cover the ground. It'll stay dark and moist, and the slugs will hide under that during the day. So they just lift up whatever flat thing they put down and collect the slugs, and they drop them in the ammonia. And one lady says, oh, and I just enjoy watching those slugs dissolve. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's kind of... But anyway... Different people.
It is not attractive, but for some, I guess, yeah.
It doesn't sound good to me, but, and it's not something that I don't have time to sit and watch. So, anyway, cornmeal, one of the garden club ladies uses baby food jars, puts cornmeal in it, and kind of tips it so that the rain can't get into it, and then she makes a little trail leading up to this jar, and she said the slugs will eat that and crawl away, and then they must die. Maybe they can't digest
the cornmeal.
Kills
them? Interesting.
Something. Yeah, she said it's working. She has fewer slugs than usual. Grapefruit halves. You know, if you eat the grapefruit, put that cup out in the garden and kind of tip it so that it makes a little dome for the slugs. And they crawl in and stay under there. And I guess they're eating that white pithy part of the grapefruit. So you just then pick it up, toss it out, put down the other half. So
they're in, you collect them in the grapefruit half?
Because they're stuck to the grapefruit half.
Okay.
See, so they're eating it, they're having breakfast, and you disturb breakfast. Coffee grounds, I use coffee grounds all over. When you pick one up that's gotten in the coffee grounds are stuck to it, so it can't leave its slime trail and move around easily. Coffee grounds are acidic, they don't like acidic, and I think it does kill them. It would be like putting salt on them.
And is the coffee grounds good for your soil?
It adds a bit of acidity, but it helps keep the soil fluffy, deteriorates quickly. If you put it in your compost pile, they help raise the temperature of your compost. So if you do that, then you're killing weed seeds, big slugs, slug eggs. You know, you might kill a few beneficial things, but you're getting rid of many detrimental than you're killing. Crushed eggshells, copper strips. People put it around the inside lip of pots and containers to keep the slugs out. A ring of lime around a specific area. Ashes, diatomaceous earth. They all work well to, you know, the slugs come up to it and then they leave. But every time it rains and washes it away, then you have to resupply.
Which happens a lot here.
You know, it does. Those three things, the lime, the ashes, and the diatomaceous earth, wouldn't harm the soil. The lime may make it, they call it sweeten the soil, so it's not so acidic. But it helps. And then people talk about fluffing the soil. They'll take like a pitchfork or a trowel and fluff the soil to keep the top of it stirred up, because that brings the slug eggs to the surface. And when they're sun, the sun keeps the slug eggs from developing into live slugs. It also puts them out where the birds eat them.
Can you see them? Are they tiny, tiny?
They're like a small pea, and they're kind of waxy white. If you use Osmocote, and the Osmocote has been in the pot for a while and it's starting to dissolve, it looks pretty much like a slug egg.
Okay. But they are visible. They're not tiny, tiny.
No, they are visible.
Okay.
But they're not...
Not giant, obviously.
No, I mean, you need your reading glasses to go out there and find them. But they're there, and that's what I read on the internet, that when you fluff the soil, that it... brings those up and they do either get eaten or
Killed in the sun.
Killed in the sun. It didn't say kill.
Oh.
It said prevents development. So maybe they just don't turn into a slug. Maybe they turn into a butterfly and fly away. I don't know. It didn't say. But that's, that works. And then keep debris off your soil surface where you have a slug problem. You know, when the plant, the petals finish blooming and drop to the bottom and old leaves drop to the bottom, the maple leaves from the other part of the yard blow in and they collect and they make that kind of mat on the surface of the soil, that's a perfect hiding place underneath that for slugs and earwigs and sow bugs and pill bugs and all those kind of things. So if you keep that cleaned up, it will help with a slug problem.
And are those other bugs you mentioned, the earwigs and pill bugs, are those good or bad?
I kind of indifferent, I think. Some people say, oh, they'll eat your plants. And other people say, nah, they just chew up dead leaves and make soil. So I really don't know. That's not something, it didn't seem like an important part of to control them. I know the earwigs will pinch. You know, if you're playing with them and you get them on your hand and they, your hand has got wrinkles enough that they can get a hold of them. But I don't know that they actually are detrimental to anything.
And do you know if there are other things? I mean, obviously things like earthworms are good.
Those
are good
things.
So are there other insects or things that are you should be watching out for and get out of your garden?
There are grubs. And there are, that would be my biggest concern. Then you have cutworms, which attack certain things, and root maggots that attack things like beets and that kind of stuff. I personally haven't had the experience of having a problem with those, but I think with root maggots, the only way to get rid of the adults and the eggs is to just dump the soil. Put it in a part of the garden where it isn't going to matter that they're that it might have root grubs, and if they don't have anything to eat, they're going to die soon. And maybe if you fluff the soil and they're out, the birds would eat them. I know the robins do a tremendous job of fluffing the surface of the soil. When I'm digging in my strawberries in the spring, they'll be 2 feet away scratching around trying to get the worms that I'm, you know, unearthing. But I don't know.
Okay, so the birds can be helpful.
Birds are very helpful. And you see them eat seeds. You see them eat little plants. You see them eat, and sometimes you don't even know what they're eating. But they're scratching and eating, and we don't want to put anything out that would damage or cause the birds or the bees to have a problem. So no matter what you do, think of the consequences to the good things you want in your garden, like ladybugs. You know, we need ladybugs to keep the aphids under control. But they're sensitive to many chemicals, and so you need to be real super, I think. It's my personal belief that you need to be careful with what you do in the garden because it affects other things.
I don't see ladybugs often. Do we have lots of ladybugs?
Most people buy them and bring them in and put them in their greenhouses. But we do have ladybugs here. You know, I assume they're here. We have dragonflies that eat bugs. We have like the granddaddy long-legged spider that eat bugs. People are now putting out a bug zapper that works with carbon monoxide. Is that what we exhale? That doesn't attract things, good insects. It attracts mosquitoes and flies and wasps and that kind of stuff. And that technology to me is amazing that it can selectively attract insects. Those are helping get rid of stuff. So walk around in your garden, check things out, keep your eyes on things, make notes of what you've done, what works, so that if it's not working, you won't waste time next year trying to do the same thing.
Okay, and we are running out of time.
Oh,
time flies. We only have a minute or two left, so if there are any last-minute calls out there, give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
Okay, I think an important thing to talk about is blossom end rot on your tomato, squash, and peppers. Most of the time, it's caused by lack of calcium in the soil. Eggshells, put them in the blender, crush them up. I pour boiling water on them, put that water on the plants. You know, wait till it's cool and then pour it around because that will give them calcium. You can buy crushed shells. You can buy tomato blossom end rot cure and use that. Again, follow the directions, and it should help. Keep your soil evenly moist. Plant the seeds and the baby tomatoes don't like cold soil, so before you transplant the little plants or plant your seeds, make sure the soil is warm. Take your bag of soil, wrap it in an old electric blanket, bring it, warm it up, and then use it. I do that.
Special electric blanket for the soil.
No. Just an old one. You know, it just, yeah. No questions? See, that's too bad. I was hoping to get some fresh ideas.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention here?
If you have succulents that you knock leaves off or break branches off of, let them lay on a blanket or a table or something so that that broken part hardens off, and then plant them.
And they'll just root from
that? They'll root. Well, succulent leaves, most of what I read said you have a 50-50 chance of it rooting. So, and that's your hens and chicken kind of things, your jades. And, you know, you could have 100 new plants in no time if you did that.
Can a rooting hormone help, or is
it
that not
mention,
advised?
Okay. Well, I think that's a personal opinion. You either like using it or you don't. I never use it. And I have tons of stuff in my yard.
Okay. So. All right. Well, we are out of time. And again, thank you so much, Lee.
Thank you.
Skidmore, for being here. Lots of great information. And if you do have questions or in the future would like to have gardening topics covered or other topics during our call-in shows, you can email me, Maria, M-A-R-I-A, at krbd.org, and get the ideas there. Let us know what topics you're interested in.